Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey Fleck here, your host for this weekend show. Be sure to check out our website, kereport.com, and podcast, the KE Report. You can also find us on YouTube now, posting a selected number of our daily editorials. On this weekend show, I'm going to start off with more macro comments, looking at economic data, looking at the Fed meeting, also looking at the market moves in a broad sense. And then in the second half of this first hour, going to be diving more into resource-specific stocks as I'm chatting with Joe Mazumdar. I am kicking off this show with Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, also editor of the Mark to Market website. Now, Mark, it was a busy week. We had a Fed meeting, we had jobs data, we had other news and earnings, key tech earnings that could have driven markets. And initially, they did move markets down to start the week. But by the end of the week, markets came back almost pretty much to neutral on the week. Mark, let's start off with the Fed meeting then. We didn't really hear anything new from Powell other than higher for longer. Rate cuts probably not going to happen at the next meeting in June. What was your takeaway from what Powell had to say this week?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that Powell didn't really tell us that much we didn't know. I think that many people thought that he was being dovish when he did not endorse the idea, the speculation of a possibility of a rate hike. But, you know, here's how I sort of see it. First, I'd say that there's like a cottage industry that thrives, that makes a living on being critical of the Fed. But here's what happens. In December of last year, the Federal Reserve says, you know, inflation, CPI, which had risen at an annualized pace of 2% in Q4, the Fed said, you know, despite inflation hitting our target, we're not ready to cut interest rates yet. We're not convinced that we don't have the confidence that this is going to be sustained. They said maybe three cuts in 2024. The market by the middle of January was pricing in six cuts plus. That's not all on the Fed, I don't think. Now, I should say then, you know, the market's corrected. And after the Federal Reserve meeting, you know, the market said, the Fed's dovish. They didn't endorse the possibility of a rate hike. And then 48 hours later, we get a soft U.S. jobs number. And a soft U.S. jobs number, the market has gone from pricing in like a very small chance two hikes to practically pricing in the two hikes, two cuts fully. The market on the eve of the FOMC meeting conclusion, the market was pricing in 28 basis points of cuts this year. And now it's pricing in almost 45. So I think this helps explain, like, you know, that the jobs, the Fed has really been the prudent one, it seems to me. And the market, as it happens, you know, as it often does, seems to have exaggerated in both directions.
Let's talk about that jobs data, because look, you can poke holes in all of the economic data and people do that. They try to find either weakness or strength within any data point, usually to confirm their bias. But looking at the payrolls number for April, it came in below the estimate, missed by almost 70,000 jobs. A couple prior months were revised down by 22,000. It was interesting that most of this miss was due to the government sector, because the private sector added almost all of the 175,000 jobs in April. Mark, what did you see within this jobs data?
So, yeah, so I don't think that the jobs data, but I want to make two points. One is about how the Federal Reserve is going to see the jobs data. And for them, it's not a game changer for a couple of reasons. One is that there's going to be another report before they meet in June. Secondly, I'd say that I don't think it qualifies for unexpected weakness. It was softer, and a lot of the internals were softer, too. I want to say the unemployment rate ticked up, hourly earnings, smaller than expected increase. And the other thing that happened was the work week fell by a tenth of an hour, which really will impact output. And I think that given the general strength of the labor market, the Fed is clear that they're more focused on the other mandate about price stability. So for these reasons, I don't think it was a game changer for the Fed. And for the markets, I think the takeaway, I think, for the markets is that the fear of reacceleration of the economy, the speculation of a rate hike seems to be misplaced. Another just, like I say, an exaggeration. And as you look forward to, you know, the next batch of important data, in some ways this year, there's only been two reports that have really mattered to the market for the most part, jobs data and the CPI. On May 15th, we're going to get the CPI and retail sales, and both of them are likely to be softer. So what I'm thinking is that the at least so far we've seen from the April data that the economy looks like it lost some momentum, but not a sufficient amount of momentum to get people really, I think, concerned about a recession. I just think that it's not accelerating, and that is a good thing. From you know, this isn't this what a soft landing would look like?
Oh, that is the question, right? Everyone is still now debating if we have a soft landing, no landing, or if this recession is continuing to kind of sneak up on us. I do want to touch on one more thing that came out of that Fed meeting, and that was the quantitative tightening, the quantitative tapering plans, where the Treasury drawdowns were expected to be moved to about $30 billion per month from that $60 billion number. But instead, they went down to $25 billion. Any significance here on what the Fed is doing in terms of that balance sheet unwind?
I don't know. I suspect not, because remember what they did. They did cut those treasury, the roll off of treasuries by about $5 billion more than expected. But $5 billion, this is like almost a rounding error. This is just a cap. It doesn't mean that the Fed does that every month. And they also made it clear that they're going to continue to let the agencies at the same pace as well that they were doing before, $35 billion a month. So I generally think that it's not that big of a deal. And I think it's offset by something that happened that very morning of the FOMC meeting conclusion. And that is the U.S. Treasury announced that at the end of the, starting at the end of the month, they're going to have the buyback program. They're going to be buying off-the-run treasuries, older issues, to try to help boost the liquidity of the new issues. So even though I don't think that this is really has any fiscal implications, I just think that mentally, or from like say emotionally, from the market's point of view, that it's probably a wash. That the Federal Reserve is going to be slowing its unwinding at the same time as the Treasury has a buyback. I think the market took it as a dovish sign. And, you know, it's interesting what's happened this week, looking at the 2-year U.S. yield. You know, this is the, and this might also help explain the other big thing that happened last week. And that, of course, is the BOJ intervention. When the BOJ raised interest rates, Bank of Japan raised interest rates in March by it was roughly 10 basis points. Some people thought the yen should rally on that. In the month of April, the U.S. 2-year yield rose 40 basis points, swamping whatever the Bank of Japan did. So this week, we did get a pullback in yields. It's the first pullback in the 2-year yield in 4 weeks. We're down at about 480, having peaked earlier this week, a little bit above 5%. This is what we're talking about, I think. The takeaway from my point of view is that the economy has lost some momentum. And what this means is that the interest rate adjustment from those 6 interest rate cuts the market was pricing in the middle of January. I think that pendulum has swung. And with the recent data and the data that I'm suggesting is going to come out later this month, I think the interest rate adjustment is over. And I think that will allow the dollar to basically consolidate. And in the current environment, consolidation means a weaker U.S. dollar.
Let's tie it over, though, to inflation. Quick comment, one more data point, that being inflation. We didn't really get any inflation data this week, but as you said, PCE, that's what the market watches. Overall, inflation has been sticky. Let's call it that. It's not going down at the same rate the Fed wants it to. Fed even admitted that, but it's not accelerating a whole lot higher either. And now we've seen some of the inflation inputs, again, jobs data, some of the wages filter into that. Oil has moved down off of some of its highs. A lot of different inputs here, but what matters, Mark, in terms of where inflation is going?
So, yeah, I think that, you know, in this cycle, even though you're right, the Fed targets the personal consumption expenditure deflator, but we take the CPI, and I think that CPI comes a couple of weeks ahead of it, and that sort of steals the thunder. So I'd say the CPI is still important. And broadly, I mean, I think that you're right. Some of the commodities, oil, look at coffee and cocoa, those things were flying, and they had a nice setback here, too. I don't think that really is the driver of inflation in the U.S. I think that in general, the softening of the labor market will help weigh on market, you know, on inflation psychology. But generally, I think that we should be expecting some softer inflation data. And Powell said the same thing. He's still looking for shelter costs, which is one of the major sticking points, to begin softening, even though he tried to explain how the government's data lags behind what's actually taking place.
All right, Mark, let's get into market moves. And starting with the U.S. dollar, you brought it up a couple of times, but Dollar generally weaker, especially to end this week. It all really started midweek as we turned the calendar over into May. As we're recording this, right around 105. But again, it came into May pretty much at 106. So it's been a couple weekdays for the dollar. What's causing this weakness? And have we just seen more or less a top being put in the dollar, a little above 106?
Yeah, so I think that, you know, we did see the dollar go to, the euro fell to 106.50 this week. Dollar yen exploded to above 160. And I'd say the two stories, I think, that are helping to explain the dollar's weakness, though it has bounced well off of its lows here today. I think the two stories would be intervention, not just once, but twice in relatively thin markets, it looks like. We won't be able to get it confirmed by Japanese data until the end of May. And officials have been very quiet about it. They failed to confirm or deny it, leaving the strategic ambiguity. But I think that it's pretty much, I think most people now agree that the BOJ intervened, and it looks like they might have sold about 50 to say 58 to $60 billion. Which is around the size of the intervention back in 2022. This time the intervention took place, looks like purposely, in very thin markets to get more of a bang for the buck. So as the dollar fell against the yen, it helped drag the dollar down against the other major currencies too. You know, this week, the only currency that has not risen against the dollar is the Canadian dollar. And that's a bit surprising just given the rally in equity markets. We're up about 1% on the NASDAQ, 1.5% on the NASDAQ this week. And we did get that setback in oil, and we did get a broader setback in the dollar. But the Canadian dollar really traded miserably, unexpectedly reported a trade deficit instead of a trade surplus. The market expects the Bank of Canada to cut rates as early as next month, which would be, of course, ahead of the Federal Reserve. When I look at the dollar index, I do think it's rolling over. You know, the 5 and 20-day moving averages, which I like. It's just a nice heuristic device, like a rule of thumb. It tends to catch some big moves, some big trends in the market. I keep an eye on that 5 and 20-day moving average. They're crossing today for the first time since around the middle of March, crossing down. That is a 5-day going below the 20-day. That tells me the trend might have changed. I'm looking at support around the 104, 104.20 area in the coming days. But I do think we've turned. Like I say, this turn should be some consolidation in nature. Remember, in March, after before the jobs data, the dollar index was trading below 102.5. And we've gone not straight up, but we've gone up there, as you know, to about 106.5. So I think we're like due for this correction coming on the back of what I anticipate to be softer U.S. interest rates and some weaker economic data.
In all fairness, the dollar's really just been in a range, though, for over a year now, about a year and a half, trading between 107 on the high side and 100 on the low side. Does that change at all here, Mark?
I don't think we're ready for a breakout yet, but even that, you mentioned a 7% range almost. That's big enough for a lot of short-term, medium-term traders. Get that right. And I mean, you think what the alternatives are. So I do agree with you, broadly trade range trading. But the range is wide enough that you can still play that range, buying at the low, selling at the high, as opposed to a trending market.
Yeah, well, it seems to be trading sideways within that range, but it did come close to breaking out to the upside. Now it's rolling back over. Let's also talk about China. They were on holiday at the tail end of the week. Some people were pointing to commodity weakness as that could have been why. But China's also been doing a bit better economically, and their markets have been doing well. So, Mark, what are you seeing in terms of China's influence in the markets, in the commodities?
Yeah, so I don't know what to make out of, in the commodities themselves. I don't think, for example, the decline in oil has much to do with what China's doing, with China being on holiday. May Day, Labor Day holiday began on May 1st, so they've been gone. They've been closed since Tuesday. And what I'm watching is the Chinese currency, and this is why I think some of this talk about China replacing the dollar, it doesn't make much sense to me. The currency is not convertible. So because China mainland's been on holiday, the RMB hasn't traded. But what has traded is the offshore RMB. And the offshore RMB has strengthened by about 1% this week. It is the best week for the year, best week since last November. And before China went on vacation and took this holiday, the stock market began rallying. Now, the Hong Kong Stock Index, Hang Seng, and there's an index of mainland stocks that trade in Hong Kong, a separate index. The Hang Seng is up for 9 days in a row. And that index of mainland shares is up 8 out of 9 days. And so this is how I sort of think about it. One of the demands for gold has been coming from Chinese retail investors who have been scared by their stock markets, scared by their property markets, scared by the weakness of the RMB. And so under the conditions of capital controls, they bought gold. Makes sense. It's rational. It's reasonable. And so even though I don't know any Chinese person myself who bought gold, it seems like reasonable, and it seems to be consistent with the prices of Chinese mainland gold. And what's happened since then? When China comes back, when retail investors come back on Monday from their holiday, they see the RMB is stronger. They see a stronger stock market. I think that helps induce them. I should say it helps reduce the urgency to buy more gold. So it won't surprise me if we're in a relatively peculiar environment where we get a weaker U.S. dollar and weaker gold prices, as the urgency to buy gold from countries like China or even in Japan, where Japanese investors might have wanted gold as a safe haven, given what was happening to the yen. Remember, the yen was trading like, I want to say, lowest level since 1990. And so because of the BOJ's intervention, because of what we've seen happen to the offshore RMB and the Chinese stock market in Hong Kong, I think that we could see more pressure, downside pressure on gold next week, even if U.S. interest rates soften and the dollar weakens.
Interesting. So very much that Eastern demand narrative, which in all fairness has been very strong out of the East. Who knows? Maybe they'll come back from vacation and continue to buy gold. But hey, you just outlined a scenario there that we don't usually see where lower rates, lower dollar and lower gold. However, some of those correlations, at least recently, just really haven't been relevant as gold and the dollar have been moving higher along with rates. What about copper too? Can I get your comments on copper and the big picture of U.S. economy still seems to be chugging along, however, a little bit slower. China, their economy might be doing a little bit better. That could also support copper, but copper made a huge run ever since March and has pulled back a little bit, but really not that much in the big picture. What's your outlook on copper and what's driving that market?
Yeah, I think China probably still the culprit. They're trying to rationalize production, and rationalized production means reducing the excess production. So I know the idea in the back of my mind is that businesses want to maximize production. No, they want to maximize profit. And sometimes that happens with reducing production. And sometimes to reduce production. You know, that's part of the thing in the U.S. press now. And after Treasury Secretary Yellen visited China and chastised them for their excess investment, their overproduction. And to rationalize that is to reduce the production, how is the U.S. able to do it? Oligopolies. And China is a little bit further behind the curve in that. And so as they try to rationalize production, cutting production, same time we've had some problems at other mines like in Peru. And so copper is up for 5 weeks in a row. And in this span, it's gone up, I'd say, ballpark about 12, 13%. We did get a pullback in the second half of this week, but it looks to me like it's just a corrective pullback, and we should look for another bounce, a new high, and that would put the May copper above the high we saw this week, which was about almost 470. And I think that when China comes back, and this ties into what we were talking about before with the currency, is that part of the reason that China hasn't taken more stimulative measures, especially using monetary policy, could be because the RMB was so weak. It was sort of probing the lower end of its band. If the pressure is off the RMB, this might leave scope for greater measures from the PBOC and Chinese monetary authorities before July's meeting, where they'll get more, where the plenum, the third plenum, should be addressing economic reforms.
So, Mark, taking a step back then, general assessment of the market environment when it comes to investors. We continue to see data in terms of investors leaning on the bullish side, but some of that overexuberance has come off the table. How do you see these markets broadly setting up? Are we in a bull market? Are we in a bear market? Where are we going?
I mean, I think that we can get higher in stock market. I think that in some ways, this is what, to me, this is what the soft landing looks like. Sometimes we don't know, it's like hard to see it when we're in it. But this, I think, is in this short phase, what a soft landing looks like. I think it's good for stocks. I'm looking for the dollar to pull back. I'm looking for softer interest rates. But generally, I think I'm afraid this is as good as it's going to get. And so, what does this mean? I think we're going to wind down the U.S. earnings season. And I think that we can have a relatively quiet May, and then it's really, I think, in June where we get some maybe the ECB cuts rates, maybe the Bank of Canada cuts rates, but at least for May, with the possibility of Sweden cutting interest rates next week, I think we're in generally a quiet phase now as the market just sort of digests the data set we have. And I don't think there's going to be a, I mean, barring you know barring a new surprise, I think this is what we have to work with.
All right, Mark, we'll wrap it up here. Thank you, as always, for your time. I always find it interesting to hear what data you're watching and how you're viewing that data globally, too, because it's not just a U.S. picture. And May could be a bit of a slower month here. Who knows? But it has been a very interesting start to this year, especially the second quarter where we started to see a bit of a rollover in markets, but that weakness being bought back after only about 3 weeks of trading. So, Mark, I'll follow up with you next week as we usually do on Friday. Thank you for joining us on this weekend show. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
Good luck to everybody.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.